Good morning. It's my pleasure to present at the American Public Health Association meeting. Always a pleasure to be in Denver. The talk I'm going to give today is really a nice collaborative between the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indians, Oregon State University, and Oregon Health Authority. And I guess I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Dave Stone. I'm in the middle of the pack there of all the collaborators that are in this cooperative project, and I'm an assistant professor at the Department of Environmental Molecular Toxicology at Oregon State University. And I come from a health department public health background. I have no financial relationships to disclose, although I do have a family relationship to disclose, as my mom and my sister are in the audience, and that's very gratifying for me, and I better get this right. So in 2008, Oregon State University received a Superfund Research Center grant through the NIEHS. And basically, this large center grant has these components to it. And the component I'm going to talk about today is CORE-E, this community outreach component, where we really are working on the highlight or the centerpiece of this community outreach is the tribal collaboration. And so with that, too, is a research translation program, which I'm also part of, which helps to interpret data and translate technology and human capacity to our partners. And then we also have some research support cores, and I'm going to highlight two of them that are involved with analytical chemistry, and they're providing support for the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla Indians. The focus of our grant of the Superfund Research Center is based on PAHs, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. And my next slide, I'll talk about why PAHs, why this is a very relevant and very toxicologically relevant class of compounds. We're going to analyze PAHs in a lot of media, as you can see here, air, both personal exposure air and ambient air, water, sediment, and tissue, both human biomonitoring if possible, and food tissue. And we're doing this in various Superfund sites as well as the Confederated Tribes Reservation. That's the CTUIRs, Confederated Tribe of Umatilla Indians. PAHs will be examined in other projects looking at animal models where they're actually going to look at transplacental exposures and see how exposing the mom will affect the pup with different cancer outcomes and develop outcomes using both single PAHs and the more relevantly mixture PAHs that you see in the environment. Once again, why PAHs? Well, they're produced, we're all exposed to them all the time. We were all exposed to them this morning. They're produced from the incomplete combustion of organic material, primarily wood and fuel. Diesel exhaust is a big exposure route for, or exposure source for PAHs. Coal combustion, we only have one coal-fired power plant in Oregon, so it's not a big issue there. But what is a big issue is wood burning in the homes. A lot of the tribal members use wood stoves, and they use different types of wood, depending on what season it is, to heat their homes. Also, there's a lot of biomass burn there. On the reservation, they do a fair amount of field burning for agricultural purposes. Additional exposures that I think we all know about for PAHs come from cigarette smoking, possibly smoking of foods, dietary intake of smoked foods, and environmental tobacco smoke. And what we're really interested in is what is the exposure during traditional smoking practices to members of the CTUIR. And then, as I mentioned before, PAHs are recognized as very potent human carcinogens. One of the first links we made with cancer and occupation was because of PAHs. What is the mission of the core that I'm working in this Superfund Research Center? There's a lot of text on here, but essentially it's to help the members of the Umatilla tribe who have reached out to us and we've reached out to them to better understand what their environmental health risks are in some of their traditional practices. And they also are interested in what is the ambient or regional background air contamination. They have some concerns from some of the diesel truck stops. Portland is in the Columbia Gorge along with the reservation, and they're wondering what the urban footprint of pollution may be. And you know, they want to know really when they smoke the salmon that they really rely on for cultural and subsistence reasons, what the signature of the PAH is or what the risk is after they smoke the fish. So I'm going to talk about three specific aims. The first one was to really establish this interdisciplinary advisory group. The last thing we wanted to do, again, because this tribe, as they've told us, has been studied to death, is to come in there as researchers and do this all over again. And so they are primary principal investigators of this project. They are very involved, and their members and the elders are very involved in a work group or an advisory board where we're going to discuss their cultural lifestyles. If we do find risks, how do we communicate these and, you know, culturally appropriate risk reduction measures? And I want to emphasize the gentleman down here in the corner. This is Stuart Harris. He's a scientist and a member of the tribe. And PEHs are found in smoke. That's the primary reason we're looking at PEHs. And he wanted to pass this hide around. This is an elk hide that he had tanned himself. And he wanted us to all handle it and smell it. And when he smelled it, it smelled like strong smoke. And the point was that we look at smoke differently than they look at smoke. Smoke is very much part of their culture, and we need to understand that if we're going to proceed together on this project. And it was very, it's a very interesting moment for me to see that perspective. The advisory board is going to help us define the human capacity that the tribe needs. Once again, they have a scientific department, so they can self-sustain some of the projects. We hope they can self-sustain some of the projects we're going to do, so that one day when the grant does end, the work doesn't end. They're going to help us identify culturally appropriate interventions and help in disseminating the messages. They have avenues, of course, to reach out to all their members that if we didn't tap into, it would just be a disservice. Also, they have the Yellow Hawk Tribal Health Clinic, and we're hoping that we can one day go into the medical records if we get IRB approval and see if there are any deficits in pulmonary function or other health outcomes related to PAHs. One of the big things the advisory board helped us with was a data sharing agreement, this third bullet here. We wanted to make sure that any data generated during this project had buy-in from both parties, the university and the tribe, before we published anything, before we presented. So me here today was what had buy-in from both groups and I shared the slides, and we massaged the slides and worked with them. We went and looked for a data sharing agreement and couldn't find one with the tribe, so we kind of had to reinvent one. And it's something that I'm very proud of that we did, and I think it will go a long way to help keep this project on good ground and in agreement. So that was the first specific aim. The second one is that we would engage the tribe in human capacity building and identify opportunities to better assess the PH exposure pathways. And so this encompassed three things, essentially, where we analyze PHs in food and game. There are upland game and, of course, the salmon and steelhead and other fish that they rely on. We wanted to monitor personal exposures and as well as ambient PHs in the air. And so this is a slide. This is what it looks like inside one of the smokehouses where they're hanging the salmon fillets, typically with skin on. And they just sit there for a long period of time and cure. And so we'll analyze PHs in salmon before this smoking method, and there typically aren't PHs in the fish. There might be one, but it's usually at low levels. But there's typically, if you look at the literature, quite a bit of PHs after the smoking process, and that's what you'd expect with such long duration exposure to smoke. So we're hoping to test at least 15 food samples. We think we can do more than that for at least 9 of the parent PH compounds that are in the NHANES CDC study. But our chemists can actually do some of the oxy and nitro substituted PHs as well. And that's important because there's not a lot known about those, but what we do know is that they're highly mutagenic. And much more, we think, than the parent compounds. And so we're trying to understand that. The other thing we want to do is go into the archives of the Temiskaluk Cultural Institute to determine how they used to preserve and prepare foods so we can look at future studies, because one of the movements in the Umatilla tribe is to bring a lot of the young folk back into the traditional ways of making and consuming food. Personal exposure monitoring, we'll use this Leland sampler down there. It's basically a little filter that's put by the breathing space. You can see Stuart has it up here by his collar, connected to a Teflon tube, and then a pump down there that you wear on your belt. And we're going to just use a few tribal members for this for quality control reasons, and you can see how important quality control is. I forgot to do it on this bullet. But we're hoping to get some personal exposure because you have a personal cloud effect with when you in your breathing zone, where actually the pH levels can be a little bit higher than they would be elsewhere. And then we may analyze urine. We're still working with the tribe to determine if that's a good idea. I personally don't know if we can get a lot of information from limited urine sampling, and so if I think that, then why would we go forward with that? And if other researchers think that as well. Another thing we're doing is measuring ambient air on the reservation. And you can see here we've installed, OSU installed a high vol air sampler to detect 24-hour levels of particulate matter, particularly the 2.5, the kind that lodges deep in the respiratory tract that we're really worried about. And so we've installed these monitors. These are for the reservation. They're for the tribe to keep. When the grant's over, they will work it. They have a chemist who has his hat on in the back there who will keep these in operation. And one of the things our chemists are hoping to do is profile and get a signature of these pHs so we can tell, based on the pHs themselves and the profile, whether it's coming from diesel, whether it's coming from the one nearby coal-fired power plant that Oregon has, whether it's coming from fuel burning, and what the issue is. And this will also help them implement federal air rules, which they are very interested in getting a handle on. The final specific aim I want to talk about is to develop culturally appropriate risk reduction approaches and outreach strategies that offer the best opportunity for improved health. And so this community outreach core of the Superfund Center is first going to help interpret the results of the urine tests, if we take them, the fish tissue results, and the personal air monitoring exposures to help them understand if their practices in the smokehouse are exceeding background, if they're exceeding even occupational limits, where they stand with exposure. And based on these interpretations, we're going to help engage in appropriate risk reduction strategies. I think everyone in this audience knows that a message of stop smoking fish is A, one I would never give, and B, one that would just be ignored. It's what they do, it's their cultural practices, but if there's ways we can mitigate exposure while they're doing it, I think that's where we're trying to go. Thank you. And then I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide because I just got a message from one of the Umatilla tribes that wanted to describe to the audience what tribal health and well-being is. But we've held focus groups, and I'll just skip to this slide here, really, which describes what it means to be a healthy person or a healthy people in a healthy environment. And their law or their way of life is something called Tamanwit. And they live in the Columbia Gorge, and the Columbia really is their lifeblood. And all these things go in Tamanwit. And so this is a statement that I'd like to read in my remaining time here. The Columbia River flows through what was a cultural and economic center for the plateau communities. The land and its many entities provided for all their needs, hunting, fishing, food gathering, endless acres of grass on which to graze their horses, commerce and economy, art, education, healthcare, and social systems. All these services flowed among the natural resources, including humans, in interlocking cycles. Adverse impacts to any resource ripple through the entire web of interconnected biological and human communities. Therefore, if the link between a person and their environment is severed through the introduction of contamination or physical disruption, natural resource service flows may be interrupted, the person's health suffers, and the well-being of the entire community is affected. And so that's the way the Umatilla view their environmental health, and that's the context in which I hope OSU can help provide information to them. Thank you.
Is there one question now for Dr. Stone before we'll have a group discussion at the end? Okay, thank you. Oh, yeah. We do? Okay, go sure. Ahead. Yolanda.
Has the research team, I really am impressed that you guys have gone out trying to define health as it relates to
do you mean cigarette smoking or smoke? So can you repeat that the last part about the smoking of fish, if it's done what with the community?
Although it increases physical health and well-being, it could decrease psychological or community health.
If we were to recommend that they reduce smoking of fish? Yeah. And that's the point of the advisory board, actually, of saying, you know, this message itself is not going to be heard. It's much like when I used to issue fish advisories for the state. The message of do not eat fish is one that is irresponsible from a public health standpoint, first of all, because of all the known benefits. And second, it just wouldn't be followed. So I think the point is really that if you can change small practices while smoking the fish, such as leaving, many of them just sit on the smokehouse and do other activities while they're waiting, or getting some kind of, there's a couple of different smokehouses. The other thing I didn't mention is there's a couple different types of wood that are used. And if one puts out much more PAHs than the other, we'd want to let them know that. Wet wood, of course, if anyone who's had a campfire knows, wet wood smokes more and puts off more. And so there could be a recommendation about drying the wood for 24 hours longer before it's used in a smokehouse operation. So I think the idea is that we would help reduce the amount of smoke inhalation and in no way offer advice that says anyhow stop the practice. Just nothing we would do.
Yeah, okay, one more.
I know you said you were going to limit hospital data in the future, but just in anecdotal reports, have there been discussions of compromised respiratory health over time in these groups or signs and symptoms that this is maybe causing issues for them?
Yeah, it's a good question. Not that I'm aware of. I won't actually be looking at the medical records if we do get approval from the IRB and the tribal, the Yellowhawk Tribal Clinic. Asthma is high in the area. I know that because we've done a county-by-county assessment, and they're in a county that has high asthma levels. It's just hard to know what to attribute that to. There's a lot of particulate matter for various reasons. There's a lot of biological allergens in Oregon, period, with a lot of mold spores, frankly. Not that I'm aware of, that I know that there's a lot of concern about pulmonary deficits. All right, thank you again.
Okay.